Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and this is side one of For the Record program number 703, Interview with Daniel Hopsicker, Catching Up with the Herd Shot Round the World. And this program is being recorded on February 7th of the year 2010, and while most of the rest of the United States is transfixed with the Super Bowl, Daniel and I are going to be here attempting to realize a small little portion of what America should be instead of what it has become. So once again, it is my pleasure and privilege to bring back to our airwaves Daniel Hopsicker, the author of Welcome to Terrorland, now out in a second paperback edition, and also Burying the Boys, and also the author of numerous articles on the www.madcowprod.com, the Mad Cow Morning News. That is the reference to the herd shot round the world. It is the Mad Cow Morning News. Daniel, welcome back to our airwaves.
Hey, well, it's my pleasure, Dave, but wait just a gosh darn minute here.
Sure.
Can't football fans be interested in what goes on in the world too?
Yeah, I'm just waxing slightly flatulent here. So
oh,
don't worry about
I
that.
I know what you mean.
Yep.
I know what you mean. I just
you know, yeah.
I'm as much a sucker for flash and spectacle as anyone else, and you know, when in Rome.
Yeah, which is a really good metaphor too. Yeah, no, I refer to myself as a recovering sports fan, you know, because I grew up, you know, rooting for these teams, and I enjoyed it. And yeah, it is fun, but football is very much like the Roman Colosseum. But one of the things that's killing my enjoyment, and it's killing it very quickly, is not only knowing that it's crooked as a $3 bill, and I actually did a program for the benefit of those who hear this on tape, For the Record 304, Illegal Procedure about Organized Crime and NFL, and also their links with the intelligence community, because there are a lot of those. But not only realizing that the games are crooked, but also so many of the owners of the teams are the people that I've studied in my research, and very strong links between some of the early NFL owners and AFL owners and the people who killed President Kennedy, which is how I came to the dance. So it's become, you know, when I look at it, yeah, it really is the Roman Colosseum. But yeah, no, it is a lot of fun to watch. And it that wasn't meant to be self-righteous or supercilious, because I've been bitten by that bug myself. But over the years, the political research has just...
Well, we got
drained
some NFL, we got some NFL owners in our story.
All righty. Well, let's...
And there are always a few hanging around the edges, because the NFL seems to attract organized crime, doesn't it?
Oh, and not just organized crime, but elements of the Central Intelligence Agency. And like I say, in For the Record 304, I did a running metaphor between Watergate and the JFK assassination, which are inextricably linked, and the National Football League. It really, I concluded that program by talking about Gerald Ford pardoning Jimmy the Greek, who had been convicted of some gambling charges or something else. And he was convicted, but Gerald Ford pardoned him, rather like he once pardoned a former Southern California Quaker congressman named Richard Milhouse Nixon.
Mm-hmm. As I'm talking to you, okay,
yep.
I mean, here's the story that I work on, okay,
mm-hmm.
Is called The Crime That Cannot Be Solved.
All righty.
It doesn't matter what particular story I happen to be working on, okay, it's always the same. I'm working on the story of the crime that can't be solved.
That's because those who must not be mentioned, okay, the reference to the Harry Potter movies. Go ahead.
So, because of Art Nadel, a $400 million Ponzi schemer,
mm-hmm.
okay, I became more than slightly aware of Ponzi schemes as crimes, and have read three or four books about Bernie Madoff,
mm-hmm.
who, as far as I know, has nothing to do with what goes on in Venice, okay? And the latest book I picked up about Madoff is by Brian Ross, the NBC, ABC investigative reporter,
mm-hmm.
who is not half bad, pretty much, usually. And at about page 15, I looked up from the book and I said to my girlfriend here, I said, wow, man, I've already learned more about Bernie Madoff in 15 pages of Brian Ross's book than I learned, in two and a half other books. But and then I read her the paragraph that I'm looking for and can't find it at the moment. But I wanted to read it to you because it's his description of Frank Di Pasquale.
Frank Di Pasquale. One of the things, very quickly, Daniel, one of the things that I found so interesting, and by the way, veteran listeners of this program can find a lot about Bernie Madoff because I've done another. I call him Lee Harvey Madoff because, you know, as soon as he gets busted, he says, I'm the only one involved. There's nobody else involved, which tells a savvy observer, which you certainly are, as am I like to think, and other listeners. That tells you right away, not only is he not the only person involved, he isn't the main person involved, and he's scared bleepless of the people who are involved. Mm-hmm. You know, the Harry Markopoulos, that SEC investigator who was trying to blow the whistle on Madoff for years, but the fix was in. He said that he feared for his safety and for the safety of his family. I don't think he thought old Bernie Madoff was going to show up at his front door packing heat, right?
No.
But, yeah, so tell us about Frank Di Pasquale, and by the way, Mrs. Di Pasquale is a piece of work as well.
So what did you find about this guy? This guy's first appearance in Brian Ross's book,
mm-hmm.
and he says, you know, highly unusual that a guy with his background should be working as a chief financial officer for a, you know, huge billion-dollar concern.
Sure.
Because he never finished high school, didn't go to college, wears a lot of gold jewelry, and you know, looks like something right out of Goodfellas.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the question in the $65 billion Bernie Madoff Ponzi scheme is, what is the role of organized crime? And for Brian Ross to roll it off in a description looks like, you know, an extra in The Godfather, and then not address it. I mean, he spends a whole paragraph giving you wink, wink, nod, nod, hint, hint,
mm-hmm.
about this guy Di Pasquale and the mob.
Yeah.
And then doesn't address it.
So the Madoff Chronicles by Brian Ross.
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead. Now tell us what he found out. Does he talk about Di Pasquale's wife? Because she, I think, was with Morgan Stanley, and very, very surprisingly, Morgan Stanley managed to bail out of the Madoff operation before it went south. But that, I'm sure that's just a coincidence.
Well, both of the people that he implicates are Italian surname people from Queens in the organization. And the other one is Annette somebody. And so the reports were, here's the paragraph, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And this is really the only paragraph in the book in which he seriously addresses Frank Di Pasquale. And it's on page 11. It's in the like introductory paragraph of the book,
mm-hmm.
the introductory chapter. You think, okay, well, I'm going to find out more about this. He says reports were prepared under the direction of Frank Di Pasquale, who managed to become Madoff's CFO despite his lack of a college education or any background in finance. With his pronounced Queens accent and gold chains, hint, hint, Di Pasquale struck some former employees as being like a character out of Goodfellas. Then he goes on to explain Martin Scorsese's movie about low-level mafia figures and wannabes. Di Pasquale is one of the few employees who knew the whole nature of the Ponzi.
Oh, so he doesn't go into Mrs.
No!
Di Pasquale.
How can you suggest something like that and not address it as a serious possibility?
Well, let me just, I can't give you a definitive answer, not being Mr. Ross nor his spokesperson, but maybe it has something to do either with his sharing of Lee Harvey Madoff's sentiment, or perhaps his editor's sharing of Lee Harvey Madoff's sentiment, when he said, nope, there's nobody else involved here. Obviously, there were a lot more people involved, and Madoff was scared as hell about the people who were.
Goddamn lone gunman, okay?
Yeah, well, that's why I call him Lee Harvey Madoff.
And Brian Ross is trying to have it both ways. He's trying to suggest that he's hip to the fact that Di Pasquale is probably mob.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, that should be the subject of the friggin' book.
Well, it should be one of them. That one goes very, very deep. But, yeah, no, it is very obvious that this was, here's that word, a conspiracy and a massive one. And yet, what do we have? A lone nut. Hence my term, Lee Harvey Madoff. But enough about that. So,
well, back to Venice, because it's the same thing.
Okay, back to Venice.
Right, the Venice airport, to even a casual observer, is a place where at least two things have happened recently.
Mm-hmm.
A guy named Wally Hilliard bought a flight school that trained terrorists that killed 3,000 people.
Mm-hmm.
And the business was sold to a guy who's going on trial for a $400 million Ponzi scheme. starting to Dell. And then they just sold the airport.
They just sold the Venice airport.
They sold the FBO, which is
fixed.
The airport exists to serve the FBO. Okay, the airport is a lot of concrete paid for by you and me.
Uh-huh. Yep.
So that whoever owns the FBO can do business with whoever flies in to take advantage of the concrete bought by you and me.
Now tell the listeners what an FBO is, Daniel.
It's a gas station at an airport.
Yeah, but it's fixed base operator is what that refers to. That's what because the term is not one hears every day. Go ahead.
Well, I mean, if you're going down a long lonesome highway, and there's you know nothing but one gas station between here and wherever you're going, that gas station is the center of commerce at that wherever it is. Okay,
mm-hmm.
I mean the FBO is the only commerce function at the airport. The Venice Airport, and when the FBO was taken over by a federal receiver, when Art Nadell went to jail, it turns out he had somebody very particular in mind that he wanted to sell it to.
And that is?
You're not allowed to know.
Oh, gee whiz.
You're allowed to insinuate certain things. But you're not allowed to know because the three men whose names are on it as if they own it, don't own it, but work for an entity which is owned by a private equity fund.
Ah.
One of America's premier private equity funds.
And that is?
Gene Gorham's operation called Greenfield Partners. What is an unknown question is whether Eugene Gorab is operating on his own behalf or on behalf of the man for whom he worked in hedge funds for 10 years before supposedly going off on his own, who 10 years ago owned more hotels and casinos than anyone in the world.
And he is?
Sternlicht.
Okay.
What's his first name? I'll tell you what you want. Immediately, you want to know more about Sternlicht, don't you? I mean, that's
you had piqued my interest. Yeah. Uh huh.
Okay.
Yeah. But by the way, Dan, just very quickly, while you're digging through there, you know, one of the things that powerful interests
have learned with hotels.
Yeah. Well, what really powerful interests have learned to keep their names out.
Oh,
of
yeah.
The paper.
I mean, it was hard to find a picture of them. So this guy comes out of nowhere. Let me tell you who he is. And his name will come to his first name. I mean, it's Sternlicht, Sternlicht.
Sternlicht as in Stern or Sterl?
Sternlicht.
All right. I've heard that name someplace.
He came out of nowhere.
Right.
And in the early 90s, began buying hotels out of receivership in the last financial collapse, the SNL collapse. Buying them from the RTC, Resolution Trust Organization.
Yep.
And within 10 years, he was one of the richest men in the world.
How about that?
Owned Starwood Hotels.
Oh, man. Okay. All right. You just – okay, go ahead. Okay.
I'd never heard of him before.
Oh, yeah, I've heard of him. Go ahead.
And you know, when this guy, Gene Gorab, who is behind the purchase of the Venice Jet Center, worked for him, the two of them – own more casinos than anybody in the world.
Now, Gorab, is it Gorab or Goran?
I don't know how he says his name. It's G-O-R-A-B.
Okay, Gorab. Okay, all righty. But so it's a B, not an N. I thought maybe it was an N. All righty. I'd not heard that name before.
And you're not allowed to now. You're not allowed to now because these guys' names, the names of the people that truly just bought the Venice Airport, aren't on any documents with the city. Guess what else they own?
What else did
they
own?
By the by.
Okay.
The airport in Hayward.
Hayward.
Hayward, California. And they got like $15 million to do something there after they got it, which is typical of them. They also own the FBO in Bridgeport, and they got $9 million out of the state of Connecticut.
Uh-huh.
And then they just got $15 from the city of Hayward, California. These guys have a sweet goddamn deal going on.
So in other words, the same operation has a little tentacle right here in the San Francisco Bay Area.
Oh, yeah. And I'm telling you, the people that just bought the airport in Venice, are the same people that have been there all the time. It is the same organization. Okay, now, how could I possibly say that? Well, you'll remember Wally Hilliard, one of the anomalies about the financier that owned the Huffman Aviation, where Muhammad Atta learned to fly. One of the anomalies about this individual was that he had a startup airline that everybody thought was not going to go anywhere, and it didn't. And it flew for a couple of weeks and then stopped.
Was this Florida Air?
Correct.
Okay.
But as a result of that, he had a half a dozen Jetstream 19-passenger regional jets sitting around doing nothing, but he was paying for pilots. Well, when I really looked into that recently, I discovered that he didn't have just six Jetstreams. He had as many as 12 or 15. He had three separate airlines that he started and then failed. You know, some of them ran routes that never sold a ticket. And so he had 12 to 15 Jetstreams, not a half a dozen. Why that's important is because he got most of the 12 or 15 Jetstreams from a guy named Mike Brady, who's the son of a general who used to work for Claire Chennault.
Oh, wow. Let me very, very quickly fill the listeners in. General Claire Chennault was best known for his work with the Flying Tigers, who were basically fighting on behalf of the nationalist Chinese. They were American pilots flying P-40s, fighting to against the Japanese. They were memorialized. The Flying Tigers memorialized best in a cornball movie starring John Wayne. But the real story with Claire Chennault was that Claire Chennault and his wife, Anna Chennault, became key elements of the China lobby and Flying Tiger Airlines, a whole bunch of operations overlapping the drug trafficking element within the Central Intelligence Agency through the Vietnam War. And so Brady, the general, the father of the guy who has just emerged as the latest front man, shall we say, for the Huffman Nexus, he worked for Claire Chennault.
Yes, the father of the man. I haven't told you half of it yet. The father, I'm reminiscing with you. Remember Wally Hilliard, okay? He bought the Jetstreams from a guy named Mike Brady.
Sure, sure.
Mike Brady is the son of a general who worked for Claire Chennault.
Oh, brother. Go
Mike
ahead.
Brady is also in business with the new owners of the Venice Airport, Venice FBO. Mike Brady gave them a plane, which they then used to fly offshore Cuba for the past 3 or 4 years, beaming free world programming to the underwhelmed Cubans, because very, very few of them listen to it or watch it. It's TV Marty. TV Marty.
Oh, yeah. Oh, so okay. So Radio Marti had become TV Marti.
Yeah. Yeah. And a plane owned by the same the people that just bought the Venice Airport and run by Mike Brady, who supplied Wally Hilliard's jet streams. Is airing free world programming, even as we speak, offshore Miami to Cuba. Now, what does this sound like to you?
Well, obviously, it is part of the intelligence apparatus.
Well, hell yes.
You know, and not only that, but I'm going to put in a plug here, Daniel, for your work as a whole, the whole body of the work you've done. One of the things that I find not only useful but essential about not just the articles on the madcowprod.com, the herd shot around the world, but the evidentiary tributaries that run through Barry and the Boys on up through Welcome to Terrorland, right on up through the articles, and that is that one sees certain elements cropping up, the elements that led up to, performed in, and grew out of the Kennedy assassination, the anti-Castro Cuban milieu, which comes right up to date here, their work on behalf of the Iran-Contra affair, Barry Seal, one of the primary players there, and then some of these same controlled drug networks working with the intelligence community were the nexus through which the hijackers, at least some of the September 11th hijackers, infiltrated. When one reads Welcome to Terrorland and the subsequent articles which update that on the madcowprod.com website, it becomes only too obvious that Wally Hilliard and company, and there's a pun there, Although I think what you're dealing with is much larger than the Central Intelligence Agency, but certainly involves elements thereof, that Wally Hilliard has more connections than a switchboard. The guy he's not just mobbed up. This guy is octopused up. I mean, he's got so many different connections. So basically, the folks that are now taking over the Venice airport
are the same folks that were running it the whole goddamn time.
Right, and it's the same folks that have been screwing things up royally, really, going all the way back to the end of World War II.
And here is like the touching element, okay? The people of Venice elected a reform city council and mayor a couple years ago, and they really fought heroically. They really fought heroically against this, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And when they folded, I could totally understand it. They had gotten more heat than probably you or I will ever know.
Sure.
The mayor in the city council meeting where they approved it, the mayor says, well, we have no way of knowing who these people are. And he's right. The city of Venice is doing business with people whose names they don't know.
Well, and also in terms of jurisdiction, right? The city of Venice is the city of Venice.
These people are major operators. Guess where this guy, Gene Gorab's private equity fund, Greenfield Partners,
mm-hmm.
Guess where they get their money?
I'm looking forward to your telling us. Go ahead.
The Sovereign Wealth Fund of Kuwait.
Well, that certainly sounds like a nice South Florida operation. Yeah, you know, Kuwait is really, you don't hear that much about it. Of course, you did during the first Gulf War. But, you know, when people inquire about power, not just mafia power or intelligence community power, but a little exercise for people out in the audience would be to go to a library and curl up with a copy of Moody's Industrials and see how many of the major transnational corporations have significant capital participation by one or another of the Middle Eastern oil kingdoms. I mean, the Kuwaiti Investment Authority is so heavily involved in some just, you know, things you don't think about in terms of the Middle East, but they are deeply involved. So, the Kuwaiti Sovereign Wealth Fund.
So think of the implications of what that are.
I am.
In Venice, Florida, okay?
Yep.
They had a guy, Wally Hilliard, who trained terrorists, made the city famous, and was also implicated in international heroin trafficking.
Sure.
They sold it to a guy, Art Nadell, who's only implicated in a $400 million Ponzi scheme, who would be like world famous if it wasn't for Bernie Madoff, but he'll forever be in Bernie Madoff's shade.
Mm-hmm.
And now they just sold it to an entity owned by people whose names they aren't allowed to know, which very likely tracks back to the Middle East,
mm-hmm.
because they're also in business in Dubai.
And by the way, one detail that I've spoken about, I don't think we've talked about it much here. I think you brought it up in one of your articles, but the aviation subsidiary of SECO, the Swiss-based holding company for the Bin Laden family's huge interests, they sent their pilots for training down to little old Huffman Aviation in Venice, California.
And isn't it amazing that story was never really in the news? And I mean, you know, in any sort of crushing way? And never got picked up by the right wing?
Well, there's a reason for that. You know, there's a reason for that. You know, the elements of the right wing, very, very shortly, because I want to get back to a lot of this is news to me. But one of the members of the board of directors of SECO, who is deeply involved with their operations, including liquidating financial entities connected to the Iran-Contra affair.
Hey, you know what?
It was a guy named, let me just finish this thought. It was a guy named Baudin Dunant, who was a lawyer for and friend of a guy named François Genoux, who was the heir to the political last will and testament and collective literary works of Adolf Hitler, Martin Bormann, and Joseph Goebbels. So that might have something to do with why the right wing hasn't exactly been pouncing on this one.
In the big picture, I look to other people besides me, so I'll remain mute because I don't really that's above my pay grade, Dave.
Well, no, it's on the public record, and Genoux was an advisor to the Bin Laden family. But yeah, and one of the things when you talk about, they say, just sort of zooming in a little bit, one of the things you focused on very heavily in Welcome to Terrorland was all the links between this milieu and Jeb Bush and the rest of the Bush family.
Oh yeah, and there's more here about Jeb Bush too. There's more here about Jeb Bush.
Alrighty.
Because the I don't want to get arcane on you. There's a couple. Jeb Bush had a quasi-government entity called Enterprise Florida. And Enterprise Florida gave money to companies whose names are all over our story.
Okay.
And to guys whose names you'll never probably really be well aware of, like Frank Musolino in Tampa.
That's a new one.
Yeah, well, you didn't hear it here. What? If Brian Ross can't talk about the mob, what makes you think I can?
Well, you know, it is, you know, okay, and some other interesting folks. That's a new name to me.
Yeah, because it all goes down four or five levels. But their companies all go bankrupt, okay? I mean, I can't tell you, if I was to make a list of the number of companies that are CIA and drug smuggling affiliated that I've come across since the days of Barry Seal, it would be dozens and dozens and dozens. Okay, I mean, Art Nadell is going on trial, and he owned the Venice FBO for a $400 million Ponzi scheme. But Wally Hilliard, while he owned the FBO, was involved with a guy who supplied the planes from Jetstream, paid for him, who was at that time in the middle of a $300 million Ponzi scheme that you haven't heard much about, and it happened right in Portland, goddamn Oregon. You can say goddamn, I guess, on TV now or radio.
Yes, you can.
Portland, damn Oregon. Okay, mm-hmm. I mean, $300 million. Pension money from mostly mob-run unions disappeared. And involved in that was the guy that gave Hilliard the planes, the guy from upstate Washington, and his partner, Alvin Melnick, also got money from that.
Mm-hmm.
And now down here with Art Nadell, we have a guy named Lou Polino, whose attorney has already written it's the nastiest letter, attorney letter I've gotten to date. Which must say something about.
You've had a few.
Of course, Lou
few.
Polino got $1 billion from Waste Management. So, I mean, how much stroke do you need to have before Waste Management gives you $1 billion?
Now, Lou, is Lou Polino the lawyer who wrote the nasty letter, or it was the attorney for Lou Polino who wrote the nasty letter?
It was the attorney for Mr. Polino.
Okay, yeah, because these are new names to me. And
well, Mr. Well, and here's why. This stuff should be known. Here's why Lou Polino's name, you know, crossed my lips and appeared on the pages of my website. Because of the 5.5 ton story. Now, you'll remember the 5.5 tons of cocaine was on a DC 9 out of St. Petersburg, which went down and picked up 5.5 tons of cocaine in Colombia and then got busted, seemingly by mistake, in the Yucatan on the way back.
Mm-hmm.
And the American owners of the plane never seemed to suffer any sort of, you know, official approbation about that, okay? Which leads one to think that, like, you know, as long as your plane doesn't get busted within the continental United States, they don't care. I don't know. But that plane, that company had used the address of Huffman Aviation at one time, we discovered. And the people that put money into that company were really a curious group. There were sheikhs from Gulf Emirates.
Okay.
There was a U.S. defense contractor in San Diego, California, called Titan Corporation.
Okay.
Who had employees that were at that time allegedly torturing interrogatees at Abu Ghraib.
And you've talked about Titan in the past. By the way, Daniel, we are
we're out of time on the first side.
Yes, we are.
Well, you know, folks will just have to, like, hang in there until the other side of the show.
We will do just that, and my guess is the listeners are on the edge of their seat and won't have any trouble at all hanging in there. So with this concludes, however, side one. For the record, program number 703, interview with Daniel Hopsicker, catching up with the herd shot round the world. This has been recorded on February 7th of 2010. For Daniel Hopsicker, this is Dave Emery saying thanks for listening.